If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home, when I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by my close personal friend, Finn Martin. Finn, how are you today?
I'm okay. Yeah, I'm not bad. Got my WrestleTalk article sent in Monday night, so, you know, that's the pressure off for another month, so I could breathe easy. But now, of course, I've got the pressure of the Power Slam podcast and performing here. So,
and then as soon as you're off of this, you've got the pressure of an article for Patreon. It's just never going to stop for you.
It's out of the frying pan and into God knows what.
Well, it's we hope that we can provide you with some escapism, given all the madness that's going on in the real world right now, by talking about pro wrestling and all the things that can happen within it.
Yes.
So something I wanted to ask you about that I just thought was worth bringing up is obviously... you know, people have been more politically savvy the last few days and tweeting and all this kind of stuff. But the big one that's come up is Jackson Ryker of the Forgotten Sons and a few things that he said. And I thought it was worth bringing up a more general discussion about, you know, in times like these where there's a lot of kind of fury in the world and stuff. Do you think that it's better for wrestlers just to kind of focus on the wrestling in terms rather than putting out big political beliefs, because it seems like we're going to start getting quite messy if we're going to have real life people tweeting from wrestler accounts telling us what they think.
I mean, I think people need to decide for themselves, because, you know, it's like everyone's got an opinion, but is one person's opinion worth more than somebody else's? And that's something that I think often gets lost in these arguments. And, you know, that person's got this opinion and lots of people disagree with it. Well, everyone's got the right to disagree with that person's opinion. And if that person feels strongly enough that he wants to put that out on Twitter or whatever, then that's his prerogative. Do I think they should do that? You know, just me, I wouldn't do this. But it's not for me, Kenny, to tell other people how they should behave, you know, as long as it's within, you know, obviously people should abide by laws and what have you and be nice to each other and all that. But obviously that doesn't happen. That there are many times when that doesn't happen on social media. You know, I do feel like we're supposed to be like more sociable now and have better social skills. You know, social media is supposed to fine tune those. And in many ways, people are nastier to each other than they've ever been. And I think that's one thing about the social media era, Kenny, that really kind of depresses me, really. Sometimes when you go in there and people are being so nasty to each other.
Do you think social media being around in wrestling just now has helped wrestling? Do you think it's hurt wrestling? Is that a combination of both? Like, how different does wrestling feel with social media than, say, I don't know, 10 years ago when it wasn't really as much of a thing?
I mean, it was going to happen because social media affects everything, doesn't it? Social media drives so many different, whether it's politics, whether it's music, whether it's film, whether it's wrestling, you know, any type of, you know, most forms of entertainment or things that we have opinions on, social media plays a part. So I don't know whether it really is relevant to even comment on whether it's helped it or it's hurt it. It was inevitably going to be part of it, just as it is part of everything else in our lives, unless you choose not to be on social media. And, you know, and don't forget, a lot of people just aren't on social media because they're just not interested. They don't want to be on it. You know, they don't want to get involved in the arguments, you know, and that their everyday lives are more important to them. But going back to your original question, I don't think it's for me really to tell people whether they should or shouldn't post their beliefs about whatever they feel strongly about, that's up to them. It's an individual choice. But, you know, choices, you know, and words and tweets, they have consequences, you know. And if you put something out there that you know is inflammatory, you may be doing that to get a reaction. You may be doing that because you believe it and you're not particularly doing it to provoke a reaction. But if it's seen as, you know, contentious remark or tweet or post, then people are going to disagree with you. And you have to, you know, you have to have the awareness, you will have the self-awareness to know that that will be the upshot of you putting that information out there. But people have got to decide for themselves, you know, what they should and shouldn't do. You know, and I think a lot of times when people put stuff out there and then there's a massive pile on, and lots of people deserve to have a massive pile on. If they put something out there that's going to be very unpopular with lots of other people, then other people are going to knock them for it. I think a lot of people then just withdraw from social media as a result of that. And I understand that as well. You know, our actions and our words and our tweets and our comments on this podcast, Kenny, you know, they do have consequences. And I think, you know, what we should do is choose our words and our tweets and our posts carefully, you know, and just try and be respectful to others. That's my philosophy. What's yours, Kenny? What do you think?
I think you're right. I mean, obviously, I think this is just my opinion, specifically with the Jackson Riker thing. I think that his timing of supporting the president of the US was pretty bad, given everything that was going on at the time when he did it. But what's happened since then, I thought was kind of interesting, was that people had found on his personal Facebook, and you can go and find it. There's no way you'll catch me reading it out. But he was saying stuff that, you know, I think was very racially insensitive generally, and I think that we might see him in a little bit of trouble. Because, we've seen in the past, haven't we, that when people have tweeted stuff or people have put stuff out on social media profiles, if they are seen to be, racist or homophobic or whatever, that those people are sort of taken to task for that and for that sort of behaviour. So I think with Jackson Riker, what's going to be kind of fascinating going forward is how WWE are going to handle it. Because yesterday we saw, you know, WWE with a lot of other social media profiles blacking out and going, Blackout Tuesday and all that kind of stuff. So, I'm curious as to see now that there's more that's come out about Jackson Riker. I mean, first of all, I think he should probably make his Facebook page private if he's going to be sort of saying stuff like that. But, I think that it's not a good look for him right now. But I
absolutely agree. Yeah,
you should absolutely, I think you should be able to support who you want, but I think that when you are directly sort of being very overtly aggressive towards a certain ethnicity, then I think that's when it kind of crosses a line and it's not political anymore, and it's more just that, like, you know, you are, whether you like it or not, going to be representing a company, and you have to... You have to have sort of some civility about stuff, and I think that that's something that he might have to sort of deal with.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt Jackson Riker's aware that, you know, Vince McMahon's a big Trump supporter, so maybe he thought he might get over with the boss if he were to, you know, lend him the President of the United States his support via Twitter. Maybe that was, you know, his intention there. I mean, Trump right now is a lightning rod for criticism. For obvious reasons. And to me, it's, you know, supporting him right now is, yeah, you are going to get absolutely blasted for that.
It's a controversy. and I think by the time we record next week, I think that we'll sort of have an answer on the Jackson Riker situation as what's going to happen, because I think more his Facebook post than anything else is going to get him in some hot water. Because we saw famously...
And rightly so, Kenny. I haven't read any of those posts, and I don't want to either. And if he's been writing that sort of thing and putting that in the public domain, then he should be absolutely punished for it. You know, there should be no exceptions to that at all. And if you are a WWE performer, WWE contractor, then you should be aware that you are in a position of some influence, and that, you know, you need to take the higher ground, and you need to, lead by example. And writing things like that, forget it. You shouldn't be writing things like that anyway. But certainly if you're a public figure, then you need to be punished. You need to be shown the error of your ways. And I hope he is. I absolutely hope he is.
We famously saw in 2015, Hulk Hogan had had those, you know, tapes released, which had happened 10 years before, five, whenever it was. And he was removed immediately. So, you know, and now I think now far more than 2015, that kind of stuff is far less tolerated than it was even 5 years ago. So, and quite rightly so.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
But I just thought it was worth bringing up because I know everybody's talking about it. So people will be going, why are they not talking about it? But to move on to pro wrestling, and on a lighter note, I actually did an interview yesterday, which is up on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/InsideTheRopes with Tommaso Ciampa. And I asked him if he thinks that this Sunday at TakeOver In Your House, we could see the return of the In Your House old set. The old house set, and he said that it is worth getting our hopes up, Finn, that we might see either the old set or a homage or renewed version of it. And it kind of got me to thinking because he brought it up. He said it's weird that old school fans have a big nostalgia for In Your House, which, funnily enough, was it one of the worst times for WWF?
Oh, it was.
Why do you think In Your House is so kind of... Why have people got the nostalgia for it? And would you like to see the house set this Sunday?
Well, absolutely I would, because, I mean, it's just going to be naff. And I mean, it was naff at the time. I mean, I remember when it was launched, you know, there was high hopes for it. But, I mean, the first one wasn't very good. It just kind of seemed a bit sort of rushed, like they didn't really know what they were doing with it. I mean, the whole, you know, house set and house giveaway thing, I think it was an effective gimmick. The fact that people are still talking about it today. I think Samoa Joe, did Samoa Joe make a reference to it on Raw?
Yeah,
I think he did, didn't he? Are we giving away a house this time? I think he did make a reference to that. So, I mean, I think it's just a nostalgia thing. And sometimes it's very much like, I guess it's almost like at the time, were you watching in 1993? Were you watching WCW in 1993? I don't suppose you were you?
No, just WWF.
Okay. Well, the Shockmaster at the Clash that year, August of 93, I think it was. I mean, that at the time was just such an embarrassment. I mean, it really was an embarrassment. People in WCW really weren't laughing about, well, actually, that's not true, because David Boy Smith and Ric Flair and Sting, they were laughing about it on the night. But afterwards, they fled the Flair for the Gold scene because they were just absolutely cracking up laughing. But I mean, WCW after really wasn't laughing about that. They were really embarrassed about it. And then in years to come, it just became this sort of hilarious moment in wrestling history. And I think In Your House is kind of in that category. It's this sort of naffness to it. You know, and if we're honest, Kenny, we do watch wrestling because many aspects of it are a bit silly and a bit naff and a bit stupid, and things happen in pro wrestling that couldn't happen in a real sport. And that's why we are fans. So when they bring back something that was even a bit naff at the time, and now 25 years later, you know, we're kind of allowed to laugh about it, then I do understand why there is, you know, interest in it, and that people are really kind of enchanted by it and just want to have a good laugh and just want to have a little bit of escapist fun. And I think In Your House is really going to provide that on Sunday, is it? Sunday,
we'll be covering that next week on the podcast. And Ciampa also said that he's hoping for a Todd Pettengill sighting, as am I. If Todd's available, get him.
Oh, that's right. Was it Stephanie Wiand, was she there as
well? Yeah, Stephanie Wiand or whatever her name was. Yeah. They were a riot.
But they were very much, you know, very much of their time. You know, we were in that sort of period, weren't we, 1995, where Vince was just trying to work out what to do next. You know, he was in the, you know, the new generation era had been launched the previous year and hadn't really, you know, knocked him dead, you know, wasn't really that much of a success. And he was just trying to work out, you know, what was next. Did he really need to revamp the formula? And he was very resistant to do that, as we know at this point. I mean, First In Your House was May of 1995. King of the Ring, 1995. Who won King of the Ring, 1995, Kenny?
Mabel.
Exactly. So Vince wasn't exactly pushing changes through at the time. He wasn't breaking new ground. You know, he wasn't innovating and, you know, creating milestones every month. he was very much, he had, you know, his foot on the brake. He was trying to slow things down, and he kind of wanted wrestling to sort of stay the same. He was trying to find a way of being successful without really doing anything different. And that really was his undoing at the time. And it wasn't until, obviously, 2 years later that things really started moving for his company, when he realized that the old formula really didn't have legs anymore, and that he had to try something new.
And thankfully, he did try something new. But we'll, yes, we'll be covering TakeOver In Your House next week on the podcast. I should mention, actually, though, speaking of things in the past, last week there was a very kind of controversial, well, not controversial, just some people loved it, some people hated it. Big angle on AEW Dynamite with Mike Tyson and Chris Jericho. Almost frame for frame of the Austin Tyson showdown from January of 1998. Some people really loved it. Some people thought it was absolutely terrible. My question to you, Finn, was, I mean, you watched the segment. What did you think of it? And do you think that based on what AEW are going to get out of it with the kind of, I guess, the buzz of Mike Tyson being involved when he's kind of in a reinvention period right now, or a comeback period in his life, is it worth doing? Is Jericho the right guy to do the angle with? What do you think of it all?
I mean, I watched it and I was trying to work out whether or not it was a homage to Austin versus Tyson the night after Royal Rumble 1998, or whether it was a parody of Austin versus Tyson the night after Royal Rumble 1998. I still haven't really decided. I think it kind of was both, because Jericho's kind of like a parody of his former self. I mean, he's got the entertainment aspect of his character, I think he really needs to tone that down. He's kind of just becoming a little bit too silly for me. I mean, I find him entertaining, but if you're going to be a top heel, you've got to be serious. You know, the comedy, I think, just needs to be a quite small part of your act. And I think now comedy has become an enormous part, the vast majority of Jericho's act. So I watched the segment and I think it was really, you know, even used the same language on commentary. Now, Jim Ross said, I hope I've got this the right way around, you know, Jericho wants Tyson, Tyson wants Jericho, which is what he said during the Austin versus Tyson angle the night after Royal Rumble 1998, as I'm sure everyone recalls. I think it was a huge contrast between Ross's commentary on Tyson Jericho and Ross's commentary on Tyson Austin. And he was far more serious, was Ross, and he really seemed like he was massively invested in that angle, and that he knew how important this was, and that he really had to absolutely bang the drum for WWF and Austin and all the supporting cast of characters, Vince and Shane and Gerald Briscoe and all the others who were a big part of that angle. But if you go back and you listen to Jim Ross's commentary on the 1998 angle, it was 100 times better than his commentary on the Jericho Tyson angle. He just seemed to me like he wasn't that into it. He wasn't really invested in it, and he just didn't think it was going to be, you know, I think he saw it as a pale imitation of Austin Tyson. So, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that it can't work for AEW, but I didn't think it was anywhere near as good as the 1998 angle, like nowhere near as good.
Is it worth them using Tyson and doing this angle with Jericho for what they would get out of it? And do you think that Jericho is the guy to do it with, or is there someone else?
I mean, the thing is, who else is there? They've made that choice. And obviously Tyson has got history with Jericho from the, you know, they had the match, didn't they? They had a tag match, didn't they, in WWF? And then afterwards, Tyson knocked Jericho out, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
It was a tag match, wasn't it? So they've got history there, so I can understand why Jericho has been chosen. And it's like, well, who else would you really put Tyson with? Maybe, I don't know, who else you would put him with. So I don't know how many other contenders there were that it would really work with. So that's the problem AEW has got. As we know, with 98, the whole Tyson thing was designed to get Austin, who at that point was, what would he have been at the time? 33, I think he was. He was born in December 64, so he would have been 33, I think he was at the time. But he was the guy that was going to be the new superstar, the guy that was going to carry the company for the next few years. You know, Jericho is, as far as I know, he's 50 this year. So he's not, you know, at this point in his career where he's about to erupt and become a bigger star than he has already been. So, I mean, you could say, well, Tyson's like an old timer as well, so he needs to really be with an old timer. And can you really put Tyson with, you know, a younger performer? So, I mean, I do understand why they've done this, but I'm not really sure what it's going to achieve long term. And is Jericho really going to benefit from this in any way? I don't see how he's really going to become a bigger star than he already is at this point in his life and his career. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know, Kenny, really. It's a, I mean, long term, I mean, you know, the Austin Tyson angle was just so spectacular on the night. To me, it was really possibly the greatest angle of all time. Maybe not the greatest angle of all time, but certainly top three. And it was just so amazing. No, it was the greatest angle of all time because of what he did with Austin and Vince starting proper the night after WrestleMania. And I think Vince's involvement in that angle was, you know, so pivotal to the success of it on the night. So, I mean, you go back and look at that and what that achieved by doing something that wasn't going to be as good. Was that really good business? Was that something that you really want to run if AEW is to be seen to be the alternative? It almost felt like something like you were trying to cash in on the success of an old WWF angle. So, but, you know, long term, this could still work. This could still be a good thing for Jericho or for other performers or for AEW's profile generally. So I think long term, you know, I don't think we can say definitively now whether it's going to be a success or it isn't. We've got to give it time. Is that fair?
Yeah, you've got to see how it plays out. I think like you say, it had to be Jericho because who else is it going to be? And I think that Jericho, you can probably trust enough to make it entertaining.
Yeah.
Across from Mike Tyson, who is so bad at performing. He is so terrible.
I mean, the thing I always like about the Austin Tyson segment was Tyson came out and you could see that he didn't really know what was... I mean, obviously he knew what was going to happen, but you could see he was kind of a little bit in awe of Austin and the whole... everything that was unfolding. And he was kind of almost amused by it. And then Austin gave him that almighty... Austin gave him the double finger and then Tyson gave him the almighty shove. And at that point, Tyson's mood changed and I thought it really did work. Because Tyson did appear to be very angry that Austin gave him the double finger. And the reaction, I think, with that almighty shove that he gave him, I think really sold the angle and made it feel like, you know, was, you know, like it was authentic. Like, you know, as Austin got into business for himself here, you know, is Tyson shooting on Austin or whatever? I mean, I guess we didn't really believe that, but at least you can suspend your disbelief more because of, you know, the aggression or the force with which Tyson shoved Austin, and then the big pile on from Gerald Briscoe and all these other people, and the big separation. I know they tried to replicate that with Tyson and Jericho, but it didn't have the same sort of zing to it. It didn't have that same sort of and partly because there wasn't an audience there. So, you know, the audience, I think, was a big factor as well in the success of, you know, Austin and Tyson, because the crowd heat was just unbelievable. So, I mean, in a sense, they were kind of swimming upstream with no, you know, obviously there are people in the crowd at AEW events, but not the you know, the big full live event atmosphere. So I think if they had that, I think we might be viewing it a little bit differently than we are now. So in a sense, they were, you know, they were hindered because they didn't have that fiery audience who were hanging on every word that Jericho said and then responding in the way that I'm sure they would have done had they been there.
Yeah,
in the way they did with Austin and Tyson. I mean, the crowd heat there was just like remarkable.
And the other thing I wanted to ask you about from AEW last week was we did get the debut of FTR when they came out and did a stare down with the Young Bucks, and it's being advertised that for tonight's Dynamite, FTR are doing a sit down interview with Tony Schiavone. And I thought it'd be interesting to ask you your opinion on it, because I know that you'd said when the Revival had left and they did the interview with Jericho, you were saying, you know, they've got something to prove now. They've got to show something to a lot of people, because unless you really watched them in NXT, are you that bothered about the former Revival? So what do you think they need to do tonight in this sit-down interview with Tony Schiavone? What's the kind of message they need to put across to make a good impact or following off after their debut last week?
I think they need really, I would rather that they talked about the future than the past, because I just feel like that's played out now. You know, the act that comes in and bashes WWE, or, you know, we weren't used correctly, or, you know, going down that road. I just, that to me just kind of feels a bit cliched now. So I'd rather that they talked about what they were going to do, not what, you know, they were prevented from doing in by their, you know, the previous organization they worked for. So I think they need to come in with a real attitude and with a lot of fire, you know, and just a lot of determination, and to just try to convey that they are, you know, serious professional wrestlers who are not there to joke around, and that they're there to win titles and make money and all the other things, and to, you know, dominate the division, really. I think they're going to need to try and find a way of doing that. I mean, I think they can do that. I think they will be able to do that. But yeah, I would rather they were really talking about what they were going to do rather than, you know, expressing grievances about what didn't happen or promises that were made and broken in WWE. I mean, I'm not really interested in that. Maybe AEW fans want to hear them say that. You know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe, you know, AEW fans are just dying for them to come in and absolutely bury WWE. And if they were to do that and absolutely trash Vince McMahon and Triple H or other people in the system, then probably their videos or their segment would receive, you know, more tweets and be a trending topic and more people would be talking about it. So maybe they will do that. And, you know, in order to really sort of put themselves on the map as this new act that's not going to be pushed around anymore, you know, maybe they feel that they do need to acknowledge what went on in WWE and why they didn't fulfill their potential there, and then sort of like segue that into, you know, this determination that they now have to do in AEW what they were not allowed to do in WWE. Maybe that will be the thrust of it. I'm not sure really, but what do you think, Kenny? I mean, it's like, you know, I'm not the world's biggest fan of AEW, so it's kind of difficult for me to really look at it from a big AEW fan standpoint. So it's hard for me to really get, you know, rah-rah about AEW and start flying the AEW flag. And if you are one of those people, then maybe that's what you want from this act, is for them to trash the WWE and to talk about how brilliant AEW is and how they're going to get it right this time.
I think that they need to come in almost with the idea that they are the best team in the world, and that's it. And I think that there's inevitably going to be a couple of digs, because I think most people want to hear a little dig. But I think as long as it's not the way that Brody Lee seemed to completely be about that, which was a problem. So I think that they should do that. I know that one of FTR had actually tweeted out, had sent a response to, I think it was Pentagon Jr., who'd written, "I miss being in the AEW shows," and Dax Harwood responded and said, "Don't come back until you learn the rules of a tag team wrestling match. We're running this now." And if they come in and they're kind of, you know, we are the big heels and we're the best tag team, and I think that what people want from them is just for them to be what people didn't get to see them be in WWE, essentially. So
yes,
I think that there needs to be a, you know, there could be a couple of digs, but this almost needs to be like a mission statement.
Yeah.
What are you bringing to AEW? What's it going to be? And who are you calling out?
Yes.
So, we'll see how that pans out. But also, Finn...
I also saw Taz's first promo with after the Brian Cage match. And, well, all I can say is, you know, promo number two will probably be better. My God.
I mean, look, he gave his catchphrase over to Brian Cage. Survive if he lets you.
The problem with Taz is that he's got no credibility as a wrestler. The last time he was a credible performer was when he was in ECW, which was in the 1990s. He was not credible. Well, actually, that's not true. He did go back in 2000. Before somebody points that out, obviously he did go back to win the title. He did actually make an appearance later that year as well on a show with the Dudleys. He did. But, I mean, you know, Taz, to me, has not been a credible guy since the 1990s when he was in ECW. So I'm not sure what he really adds to Brian Cage in terms of you know, credibility. And certainly based on that verbal performance, he's not adding a whole lot in the microphone department. But as I say, things can only get better.
Things can only get better. Well, I did watch there was a promo that Tully Blanchard did on the AEW YouTube channel with Sean Spears, and he was terrific. Just sort of shouting down Sean Spears for the performance at the pay-per-view and saying, you know, did you think it was funny to have my face in your crotch? That's not going to be my legacy. You know, if you want to get serious, then, you know, you better start now or I'll be out that door. And, you know, just sort of really gave him a kick up the arse. So if Taz is going to be a promo guy, you've got Tully Blanchard to be contending with, who's doing much more intense stuff that seems to be resonating. So
yeah.
But also, I did want to bring up before we talk about SmackDown and Raw, Impact Wrestling released a video earlier this morning, or late last night, sorry, where it was a 30-second promo for Slammiversary on July 18th, and there was a homage to pretty much most of the released WWE performers. There was a whiskey for Aiden English, there was a Bulgarian flag for Rusev, there was images of Eric Young, Rockstar Spud, the Kanellises, Kurt Hawkins, Carl Anderson, pretty much most people, with the idea that, I guess, you know, because the contracts, I think, the 90-day clauses for the talent are up on July 17th. So anybody would be free to turn up at Slammiversary. So I wanted to ask you, out of the released people, is there anybody that you want to see Impact pick up on and debut on July 18th? Is there anybody who could add some much-needed star power to Impact?
Well, I mean, lots of them could, without a doubt. I mean, you've got to wonder. It's quite a bold move by Impact Wrestling, isn't it?
I think it's very clever. Because they've cleverly sort of had a little tease for everybody, so that you know you're wondering who it's going to be. And the thing is, Anthem have got money, and you know we've talked about this for ages. Like even you, who you know really loves Impact, you know you'll talk about how well it's a great TV show, but there's just no money there, and there's no stars there.
Yes.
And they could do with picking up four or five of these people and really sort of paying money for them and making them a focal point of the show. And if you know, if they got Rusev, for example, people are going to tune in to see what Rusev's going to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm catching up on Impact. I'm not entirely up to date with it, but it's I'm a fan of the show. But it's just, yeah, it's streamlined. You know, there's been a lot of cost cutting. There's very few stars. I mean, especially at the moment, because where I'm up to in the timeline, which is, I think, May, second week of May, I think I'm up to. So, I mean, Tessa Blanchard's not there because she's stuck in Mexico. So even some of the existing stars aren't available. Presumably by July, Tessa will be able to participate. She may well be participating right now. I apologize for being not entirely up to date there. But absolutely, yeah, I think Impact Wrestling with this video, lots of people are going to be talking about it. If they're not already, we're talking about it now. You know, I know, you know, Impact Wrestling only gets mentioned, what, once every 6 weeks or something like that?
Well, the thing is, I saw the video and I immediately thought we need to talk about this in the podcast. And the fact that that's something that is coming up is a testament to it being something good that they're doing, I think.
Definitely. I mean, any of those performers, by going there, people are going to be talking about them and they're going to be talking about Impact because none of them have been there for many years. So I think anyone that they bring in, it's going to make a difference. The trick, of course, is does it make a difference long term? You know, how many people may be watching that event, but it's like, are they going to stick around and watch it week in and week out? And that's obviously what Impact needs right now. But I mean, I absolutely endorse their decision. If the money's there, if they can afford it, you know, if it makes sense financially, they're willing to actually invest in this talent, you know, for the long term benefits to the company. I mean, I think it'd be great if they brought in like half a dozen of the ex-WWE performers.
And also, they're in a position right now where what they could do is they could say, look, you know we're not the most attractive proposition right now. So, you know, in this tough time, we're willing to offer you a 1-year deal. And
or even a 3-month deal.
Yeah,
you could just even say that. They say, listen, you know, we realize we're not big time right now. We are not the company that we once were. You know, we don't have that much money, but we can pay you X amount for 6 weeks or 6 tapings or whatever. And we'd like to do a program with you. Why not come in and just give it a go, see if you like it. And if it's all working, then we'll extend. And if not, then we'll write you out after 6 tapings or whatever. I think something like that. And I think more of those performers would be willing to try something like that, because it's not a long-term commitment. You know, I mean, you would think that when everything's up and running again, that a lot of those performers are going to be able to make, certainly like the Rusevs, Kyle Anderson, Luke Gallows types performers, are going to be able to make a lot more money than Impact can afford to pay. So if it's just a short-term contract or a short-term deal, then I think that would be more appealing to them, because they're not tied up there full-time and they can still, you know, work for AEW in, you know, the autumn, whatever, or go back to Japan or whatever. They're not tying themselves up for years. So I think something like that would be probably in the best interests of both parties. What an audacious move by Impact Wrestling to put that video out featuring footage of all those ex-WWE performers. So I thought it was amazing. I just hope that they can actually deliver on this, Kenny, and bring some of them in, and that it's not, you're not dangling the carrot and then never delivering anything.
Yeah, you want to be getting a couple of the bigger names. You're looking to see Rusev or see the club, the Bullet Club guys, or Anderson and Gallows. Like you want a couple of the big names. You don't want to just be seeing Mike and Maria and that's it. You know, we want to see a bit of a bang at this show.
Absolutely.
Well, let's move on to SmackDown and Raw. We'll kick off with SmackDown. Now, there's a big angle on the show that has been a big talking point, which is the angle that opened the show, which was a hit-and-run angle where Elias was being put in a stretcher with an ambulance. Braun Strowman was a witness. It ended up that the police looked in the car that had carried out the hit-and-run, and there was paperwork for Jeff Hardy. We then saw Jeff Hardy apparently inebriated in a bush. I'm not making that up. And and then
he was in a dishevelled state. Wasn't it?
You know, Jeff Hardy in that bush was not too dissimilar to Finn Martin on a Jaeger bomb. I'll tell you that right now.
But I'll tell you, Jeff was in better shape than I was after the Jaeger bombs. I don't mind saying that. Jeff said, "Oh, my head. That was me the next day."
That was you the next day. You were texting me, basically calling me all the names under the sun. But the impetus here is that has Jeff been drinking again? Has he not? That took Jeff and Elias out of the semi-final matches of the Intercontinental Title Tournament. Before we talk about what they did later in the show, what do you make of the angle? And I mean, WWE has had angles that have had this involved in it before. Some people are very upset about it. Some people get this as pro wrestling. Where do you stand on it?
I think a certain member of the Hardy family, I think she strongly objected to it. I think you know who I'm referring to, don't you?
I do. I'm not going to say it, but yeah, I know who you're talking about.
So, I mean, she was not happy about it at all. I think the implication was that she felt that it was very exploitative, and I can definitely understand why someone would reach that conclusion after watching it. My way of looking at it is that it was obviously a setup. We saw Jeff Hardy at the end of the program, and that it will come out probably this Friday or the Friday after, that he was not responsible, he was not behind the wheel of the car, and that he was set up. So I'm sure that will be the outcome of this. So, I mean, I didn't really have a problem with it. I think WWE's done far worse. I think Jeff Hardy right now has got enough clout that if he objected to it, or even paused or hesitated or was a sharp intake of breath or whatever, that they wouldn't have done it. I mean, you know, he's got sufficient power right now. We know, we've talked about this on previous podcasts, haven't we, Kenny, that they want him to resign. They want him to stay. So I have to assume that Jeff Hardy, you know, didn't really object to it, because if he did, this would not have taken place. And to me, it's a setup thing. It's not, you know, okay, you can say, yeah, they are exploiting the fact that he's, you know, he's had, you know, been arrested for drunk driving before. You know, he's had problems with alcohol, obviously problems with drugs. That's been part of the redemption storyline that they've been broadcasting over the last, what will it be, 6-8 weeks, whatever it is now, maybe even longer than that, going back to actually before WrestleMania, wasn't it? So, to me, it was just like, the whole thing was just, if in the end up, it came out that Jeff had been drinking again and that he'd fallen off the wagon, then that would be totally unacceptable. But because this is so obviously a setup by either Sheamus or possibly King Corbin, Sheamus seems to be the number one, the prime suspect here, then I don't really have a problem with it in the long term. That's my opinion. I mean, I thought it was fairly well done. You know, the program opened with footage of Elias lying in front of a car that supposedly knocked him down in the Performance Center car park. Police and ambulance were there. Police discovered that the car had been rented by Hardy. Then he was found in the disheveled state, claiming that his head hurt. So the implication being that somebody had, you know, knocked him out or whatever, or attacked him and then thrown him in the bush. Elias was taken to hospital. As you said, this obviously had an impact on the Intercontinental title tournament.
We'll go into that one second. I just wanted to very quickly say, Sondra brought up a point which I think is worth noting, which is, I think that this will, first of all, I'm quite a big fan of bad wrestling angles, like really cheesy, you know, like Renee Young being the reporter on the scene and all that kind of stuff. Like, I really like that kind of stuff. So the angle worked for me. I think that what we will come to see in time is, if this was Jeff's idea, great, no problem, it'll be fine. If this was not Jeff's idea and this was what they pitched to him, I'm not sure this is the best thing to be pitching this guy in the 1 year you've got to convince him to stay with you. Because if you're trying to convince him to stay and you're like, let's just do a little angle about your substance abuse, like, he might agree to do it, but that might in his mind go, okay, I'm not really thrilled about having to do it, but he'll do it because it's the gig. So I think it's going to depend on how much Jeff had to do with the angle. Was it something that he wanted to do and thought, oh, this would be a good way to further the feud with me and Sheamus? Or is it something that was pitched to him? Which I guess we'll find out down the line. But
I mean, it did sort of seem that they were setting this up with the whole redemption storyline, with them showing the mugshots and, you know, newspaper clippings of his arrests and him acknowledging, you know, his past misdeeds. This does play into that.
Maybe he was kind of like, let's use it in the angle.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you said, then we basically found out in a backstage segment, AJ Styles, because he's clever, was not willing to fight for a place in the final that he already had. So he just took the shot in the final, and there was going to be a battle royal to see who would face Daniel Bryan, the other semi-finalist who did want to fight to earn his spot in the final. And Sheamus won the battle royal, and then Bryan and Sheamus had the match in the main event, which Jeff Hardy made his triumphant return. It was confirmed later on that he, in fact, was not drunk and had been attacked. And Hardy helped Daniel Bryan beat Sheamus, so we still get Bryan and Styles. I thought the angle throughout the show actually made this, for me, the easiest SmackDown to watch in a long time, because there was a thread through the show that I was into.
Yeah, I would agree. And with, you know, with Hardy coming out at the end, it was almost like an Attitude Era angle, wasn't it? With the person who'd been arrested turning up at the end, almost like an Austin thing. And yeah, I mean, I thought this SmackDown was really, really a lively show. I mean, I thought that Battle Royal, the 10-man Battle Royal to determine Bryan's opponent later on the show, I thought that was dynamite, that battle royal. I thought it was really, you know, really hectic, and, you know, really at the end, you're like, well, is Jey Uso going to win? You know, it looked like he might, and then it's Sheamus. I've got to say, I was slightly disappointed when Sheamus won. But he did, and I thought the Battle Royal really delivered big time. And then that led to Daniel Bryan and Sheamus. And as you say, Bryan beat Sheamus after Sheamus had been distracted by the arrival of Jeff Hardy on the stage, and Hardy beat Sheamus down after the match. So absolutely, the message I think that we can deduce from that is that, you know, Hardy was released without charge by the police, and that the investigation will continue. I mean, actually, I'm hoping the investigation will continue, and that this won't just be dropped, and that the police will then actually arrest Sheamus. That would be really quite entertaining if that were to happen.
Yeah, maybe we get that next week. I mean, when you bring police in and do these kind of, you know, we mentioned this earlier within your house, sometimes you want the cheesy angle. So, yeah, you know, and we got it here. And I mean, apparently, I think Fightful had said that the Daniel Bryan AJ Styles final match has already been taped, and it's a superb match. So, you know, we get that coming out of it, and we get the Hardy Sheamus program continued. So you still get kind of two for the price of one.
Absolutely. So, I mean, in many ways, they didn't really do anything. It was actually pretty brilliant use of TV time, because they didn't really do anything new. It was kind of like treading water. We only got to the point that we were at before the show was first broadcast. But I suppose there has been an increase in tension, you know, an escalation of hostilities between Hardy and Sheamus. So there is that to look forward to. So, yeah, it actually did achieve something. You know, I'm lying. I'm wrong about that. But, yeah, we're just bringing us back to Bryan and Styles again. And I can well believe that they will have a tremendous match. I can't wait to watch that. And I don't know who won. Don't want to know who won. I'm looking forward to watching it when it's broadcast.
Exactly. I also want to give some props to, I thought Lacey Evans and Sonya Deville showed some real fire in their double countdown match they had on the show. And, yeah, I thought they did really well here.
Yeah, I would agree as well. Yeah, Lacey Evans, she shoved Sonya Deville down backstage when Sonya was boasting about herself. I've written here, well done, double count out. Tough match was the words. That's what the words I used to describe it. It's a tough match. Like, they were really going for it and wanted to put something on that was very believable. And I feel that they achieved that. And, you know, Deville retreated from Evans after the match. You know, and Deville, I think, has really, her status has been enhanced lately by the Mandy Rose feud. And I think her withdrawing from Lacey Evans, I think, really put Evans over as well. I mean, Evans is somebody who we are. I think we were actually talking about this time last year, Kenny. So, you know, Evans has been rushed into this feud with Becky Lynch. It's too soon for her. Is it over for her? It's like, well, you know, maybe she can make a comeback. And it feels to me like she's somebody who has recognised that she was pushed into that programme too soon, wasn't ready for it, and has really applied herself, and seems to me like to be a fairly credible in-ring performer right now. You can see that she really wants it. She wants to be that person that they thought she could be last year. I think the thing that's always going to hold her back is the character. She needs to change this character. But the fact that her wrestling is greatly improving, I think, you know, 3 to 6 months from now, when they're ready to give her the big push again, I think they need to give her a new character at that point.
Yeah, and I think she's doing really well in the position she's in of kind of being, yeah, you know, she's kind of retained some of the parts of her heel character that worked and brought it over to being a babyface, and that's quite a hard thing to do. Like, not a lot of people can do it, so I do think Lacey deserves props for that. And I'm looking forward to seeing the programme continue.
I mean, the 50s pin-up thing, I mean, obviously Vince, you know, was born in 1945, so he remembers, you know, Betty Page and the pin-ups of the 50s, but most people watching weren't born at that point. In fact, many people watching, their parents weren't born at that point. So, I mean, to me, this 1950s pin-up character that she's playing, it's got to go. She needs something that fans today can relate to.
But also, you know, slowly getting that out and changing it gradually might actually be better rather than just kind of, you know, here's a new thing she's doing. And the women kind of dominated SmackDown as well, because we had a moment of bliss with Alexa and Nikki Cross and the New Day, which led into Sasha and Bayley coming out, which obviously is going to set up that program. We got Alexa Bliss versus Sasha Banks, with Sasha getting the win. But the MVP of this whole segment has got to be Nikki Cross. I mean, she was an absolute riot on this show, from the, you know, Alexa giving her the cup of hot tea and Nikki not knowing where to put it when the New Day were there, and Nikki dancing to the New Day's music. And then Nikki on commentary, at one point she petted Michael Cole on the head. just so funny. And I think Alexa and Nikki against Sasha and Bayley is a good program. It's a good program for the champions to be in. And Sasha and Bayley, you've got to feel they could be a real contender to take the belts off them.
Yeah. I mean, Nikki was there with it, you know, the Scottish pancakes. Nikki said that she made them by hand. They were her grandmother's recipe, apparently. I mean, I really enjoyed the, you know, Bayley volunteering Sasha Banks to wrestle Alexa Bliss. And Sasha Banks was like irate about this. She's like, you know, how dare you? And she's wearing these big massive heels, which were then stored on the at the announce desk. You know, so someone had to go backstage and get her some trainers. So, I mean, Bayley and Nikki Cross, they were at the commentary desk and they were providing a lot of noise. They were providing a big atmosphere along with the people behind the Perspex, of course. You know, looked to me like Banks might lose this one and that maybe there would be, you know, the sign, you know, the wedge would be driven further between Banks and Bayley. But Banks scored the win after a commotion at ringside between Bayley and Nikki Cross. And Sasha Banks and Bayley left, you know, together as pals, united again. So this story is continuing. They are doing everything. They are doing the reverse of what we always said that, you know, that they can't, you know, that we always said they can't do long-term storylines anymore. And they are, I've said this before, they are proving us wrong with this one each week.
They really are. The feud is, it's just simmering at a nice level. You know, you know when you're making a meal and you're maybe making like a sauce to go in some chicken or some pasta and you leave it simmering and you know, in 20 minutes.
Is that on one or two or three? What number is it on the hob?
Maybe one, I think. You've got it right down because you want it to really simmer for another 20 minutes or so before you are ready because you're cooking your little other bits and pieces. This feud is just simmering at such a nice level and it's not, I mean, it's subtle. Bayley's really kind of come into her own in this feud, in this partnership with Sasha. Yeah. And I honestly don't think Bayley has ever performed better as a character than she is now.
No, I couldn't agree more. I mean, in the WrestleTalk article, I put her over in that. You know, the Tamina, I did a review of Money in the Bank and also wrote quite a bit about the cinematic matches, which are sort of very in vogue at the moment, as people know. So, yeah, I really put Bayley over in that. And, yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think she's doing really well. I think she's really found a feet in this storyline. You know, going back to, you know, Banks and Bayley, you know, this dish that's simmering at the end, Kenny, it's going to be a feast for us all. See what I did there?
I see what you did. It was very clever. I thought SmackDown this week was a really fun show. I echo your sentiments on that as well. And next week when we talk, we'll be talking about the tag team title match with Bliss and Cross against Sasha and Bayley. So we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, I mean, on one hand, it would be...
I see them winning it on the first time.
No, I don't. I hope they don't. I hope they don't either. And, you know, I don't think that would be the right outcome. But I think they could win the belts maybe 4 weeks from now, maybe, or maybe Extreme Rules, they could win the belts. And then them as champs, and when they finally lose the belts, that could be when the split occurs. But I mean, I don't think they should rush this. And I think they've shown, you know, tremendous restraint, you know, just resisting the temptation to rush this Banks and Bayley split. I think they know they've got something that really is working here. And also, you know, for so long, they screwed it up so badly with Banks and Bayley. We talked about this at the time, Kenny, didn't we? To the point where we couldn't even bloody talk about it anymore. We were sick of talking about it. And like now, you know, this is redemption. This is atonement by the creative team to Banks and Bayley. And all those people who said, oh, you know, they can't do anything right. Well, they're getting it right now. So it's time for you to acknowledge that WWE is getting it right and you were wrong.
Agreed. And let's move on to Raw, but just the last thing I want to say about SmackDown is I don't think that Kurt Angle and I have ever shared a facial expression more than when it came back from the Otis and Mandy dream sequence video. Just brilliant.
Yeah, it was quite something, wasn't it?
And
a dream sequence of them kissing, and then I think it then really did happen, didn't it, after
it
that?
It did. And you know, look, we've given WWE shit for years about not presenting that, like, somebody who is not the typical Adonis could get the girl, and they're showing that.
Absolutely. I mean, this is again entirely unexpected, and I was watching that last week, and I was just like, wow, that really did just happen. And lots of my preconceived notions about what this company, you know, will and won't do have been shattered by this storyline. And same with Banks and Bailey, you know, and it's really nice to see them do things well and surprise us. It's nice to be surprised. It's nice to be proven wrong as well.
Yeah, 100%. And obviously, Kurt Angle introduced the vignette for Matt Riddle. We talked about him going to SmackDown, so we will obviously talk about his debut when it comes. But over on Raw, it was also a kind of packed show on Raw as well. One of the big angles or the big things coming into it was going to be the Rey Mysterio retirement ceremony presided by Seth Rollins. Instead, we got a Seth Rollins promo to open the show, which is it's difficult to watch that at 1 a.m. in the morning. Seth Rollins talking for a while. It's difficult. But this one was okay. It wasn't as bad as some of them have been. And it did lead us into Seth Rollins versus Aleister Black, where Black beat Rollins when Humberto Carrillo came out to kind of even the playing field and allow Black to roll Rollins into the pin and get the win. We've obviously got 3-3 here. Eventually, we've got Rollins, Murphy, and Austin Theory. We've got Aleister Black and Carrillo, and then Ray coming back. What did you make of the match with Aleister Black and Seth Rollins? It went 21 minutes.
Yeah, I thought it was Black's best WWE match to date by a considerable margin. I think, did he have some good matches with Murphy? I think he did, didn't he?
I liked his matches. Yeah, I mean, I really liked his matches with Andrade in NXT. But on main roster, yes, this has been by a mile his best stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that I think has struggled to find his feet. And it's odd because he's one of the few ex-NXT performers that they seem to really like and that he usually wins. And he's nearly always featured. But a lot of the time, he hasn't really had a storyline or a direction. Obviously, the whole Murphy thing, knocking on the door and running away thing was, you enjoyed taking the piss out of that one, Kenny. and rightly so, because it was just lame.
Never thought I'd see Chapdoor Runaway on Raw. Game of Chappie on Raw. Who knew?
That's it. I mean, you know, you reveled in his misery, really, Kenny, didn't you? Let's be honest.
100%.
So, Black did have some good matches with Murphy, but they were not. They didn't really feel like they mattered. They didn't really seem like they were going to take him anywhere, and they really didn't. But now here on Raw, he had this match with Rollins. As you say, it was a long match, really good action. Rollins is a tremendous in-ring performer. As you say about this character, it's the monotone promos. I mean, are they supposed to be a heat getter? I mean, they just, as you say, you're fighting to stay awake if you're starting to watch this thing at 1 a.m., it's like, oh my God, there's no way I'm going to go the distance on Raw if Seth Rollins is going to be talking for 10 minutes. You know, I'm going to be getting all tucked up and going to sleep now. So, I mean, yeah, it was really good. And afterwards, Rollins curb stomped Carrillo, and then Austin Theory and Murphy grabbed Aleister Black, and Rollins nailed him with the curb stomp as well. So he kind of got his heat back afterwards. And it seems, as you say, this is going to continue with Ray returning.
And we did have Ray later on the show, because Ray had an appearance at the top of hour three, and it was Samoa Joe kind of talking to him, and, you know, is he going to be able to come back because of the eye injury, and he doesn't know, and all this kind of stuff. And as he's kind of doing this promo, Dominic Mysterio sits down beside him and just basically cuts this promo on Rollins about, you know, he's barely a human being, somebody needs to do something about this, and Dominic ends up looking into the camera and saying that, Seth, you're a man of scripture, an eye for an eye, and walked off shot. I know that Dominic Mysterio is young, and I know that he probably needs work, but, like, he's really good for being 21 years old or whatever. Like, the stuff he did with Lesnar, the stuff he's doing with Rollins, I can't believe how good this guy is.
Yeah, I mean, he's using the method. You know, that's his motivation. He's allowing himself, using real emotions, allowing himself, you know, to believe this is real. And I think to really get that emotion, a wrestler needs to do that. You've got to say, okay, he's only 21, but he's, you know, son of Rey Mysterio, so he's grown up around this. He probably has known for many years that this is what he was going to do. And he's got Rey there telling him what to do and how to do it all the time. So, I mean, you know, Rey Mysterio is in many ways one of the, I think he's one of the best ever at many things. There's things that he doesn't do well, but I think his longevity is pretty remarkable. And he's had success pretty much everywhere he's been. So, I mean, Rey's a guy that, and obviously Dominic's going to be in, at many points in his life, is going to have been around other wrestlers as well. And he'll be sitting under the learning tree, just as you do each week, under my learning tree, Kenny.
Every week, I'm just looking up, hoping that one day you're going to drop some wisdom.
That's right. I mean, who knows when that might happen. It hasn't happened yet in 3 years.
It's been 3 years.
There's always hope, just like there's hope for Taz, you know. So maybe when the day that Taz cuts a good promo for Brian Cage, that'll be the day when, you know, I impart some useful wisdom to you, Kenny. But no, my what I took from this, I thought Dominic did a really good job here. But what I'm, this is what I want from this, Kenny. Dominic joining Seth Rollins's group. That's what we want. Dominic being corrupted by Seth Rollins. Dominic moving over to the dark side. That's what I want from this storyline.
I mean, I think that's going to be the end goal. That's going to happen. And I think it could be great. It could be really good. I mean, I hope that it's done in a way. I'd like it done in a fresh way. I almost like the idea of him joining the group, but like he's not willing to do anything to his dad, and they're all trying to get him to, and you know, like just have a bit of kind of emotional heartstring moments there, and maybe that eventually gives you, he can go babyface again, you can do a big tag match or whatever. But yeah, I'm in. And I can't believe that I feel more comfortable when Dominic Mysterio is involved in a storyline. It's a far cry from 2005, I'll tell you that.
I mean, the problem with Seth Rollins is that, you know, Austin Theory and Murphy, you know, are really proficient in the ring. You know, I mean, Theory, for, you know, he's still a young guy and he's really good. But they've both got no personality, neither has any personality at all. So, I mean, it's like he almost needs to get rid of Theory and Murphy and bring in some talent with some personality that are going to be able to connect. Because this story, like this act, you know, this group isn't really setting the world on fire right now, is it, Kenny?
It's. I mean, you know how earlier on I said the food is simmering on the number one and the hob? And that's what the Sasha and Bailey thing is. With Murphy and Theory, the hob's broken. Like, it just doesn't work. That's where they are. They just, and they're good wrestlers, but like, when you watch Raw and you watch SmackDown, yeah, you want to see good wrestling matches, but the good wrestling matches tend to work when the characters are working. And, you know, they need, I think that I'd be willing to give Theory more of a chance because he's younger and he's only 23, but like, I mean, Murphy's been around, how long's he been here? 7 years?
I don't know. It feels like a long time, doesn't it?
Because I'm sure he was on like the first NXT takeover in like 2014 with Wesley Blake. I'm sure Alexa Bliss was managing them. I'm sure he was there around that time. He's been there a long time, is the point. And
Yeah, absolutely. Because Alexa Bliss, I think the first time we definitely, she was playing the babyface character when Powerslam was still going, and she obviously made the appearance during Triple H's entrance at WrestleMania 30, didn't she? She was there with Charlotte. Was it Sasha, the other one?
Sasha, Charlotte, and Alexa.
That's right, yeah. They were all obviously wearing masks. But yeah, she'd been around prior to that when she was playing the babyface character. So yeah, he's been around a long time, and it's not exuding personality. So he's not, you know, ripping up a storm out there. So that's the thing. I think Rollins got, in order for Dominic to join this act and it for it to really get over and be something, it needs some performers in there. Like, for instance, Samoa Joe. Say Samoa Joe were to return to action. He could be somebody who I think would be a valuable player in this faction. He would be somebody who I think would really enrich Rollins and make the faction seem more relevant and meaningful and appealing. But Theory and Murphy are just, you know, they've got a lot of in-ring talent, but it's the other aspect that really draws people in. You know, we all know that.
Also on Raw, we saw Asuka and Charlotte in a non-titled champion versus champion match. The match went about 10 minutes because Nia Jax ended up coming out wearing the Asuka mask and dancing like her. And there's a great bit where Tom Phillips kind of goes, "And that's Nia Jax." And Samoa Joe goes, "You think?" Like, you know, of course it is. And she can end up obviously coming in and making it a non-finish. I thought the match was good. I really enjoyed that Asuka was presented as on Charlotte's level here, as opposed to the big two matches they've had on SmackDown and WrestleMania, where, you know, Charlotte was presented as the superior star. So I thought this was a step up for Asuka and how she was presented. Did you get that vibe when you were watching it?
Yeah, definitely. Actually, I think the finish was a count out. I did watch it twice, and you could hear the referee counting Asuka out.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a count out. But yeah, it was a very competitive match. I think you both were presented equally. Nobody was inferior to the other here. I did wonder why, when they announced at the start of the show, I did wonder why that this match was taking place. We've obviously seen it before, and to me it really felt like a match that they should not revisit for a long time. And then I think they could probably get two pay-per-view or even three pay-per-view series out of this again at a later date. But I mean, neither was harmed by the finish. As you say, Nia Jax walked out. She came out to Asuka's music. She was wearing Asuka mask, took it off, and then she had the Asuka makeup around her eyes and around her mouth. And yeah, that was that. So it was, yeah, I mean, it was just designed, really, wasn't it? Neither Flair nor Asuka was harmed by this in any way whatsoever. And this was just designed to promote Asuka versus Nia Jax at Backlash.
Yeah, and we should mention that Nia Jax did beat Kairi Sane. And obviously there was all the kind of hoopla about what happened during the match.
Yes.
And we watched an edited version. But what did you think? I mean, are we at a stage where Nia Jax should not be performing on pay-per-views? Are people overreacting to it? What do you think?
I mean, I watched it. I think I watched it maybe three or four times. And at first I was trying to work out if Kairi Sane was at fault. And I don't think she was. I mean, Jax grabbed Sane by the back of the head and threw her in a downward motion. So there's no way she could possibly have, you know, given the distance between Kairi Sane and the ring steps, there's no way she could have turned her back and, you know, crashed into it back first. You know, Jax deliberately threw her head first into the steps. Now, even if her head hadn't caught the edge of the bottom, you know, the edge of the bottom section of the ring steps, I think was what caused the deep cut near her hairline. Now, even if she hadn't suffered a cut, I think she probably would have been bruised by this and knocked, you know, she would have been shaken up by this. So, I mean, Jax has done this before, obviously done this before with Kairi Sane and done this before with other opponents. And it just keeps happening. And eventually, Kenny, you run out of excuses for people. To me, it was a reckless act. Am I allowed to mention that there is a huge weight difference between these two, Kenny? Am I allowed to say that in June of 2020?
Yeah, because obviously, you know, it's a real thing. And, you know, when you've got someone who's much stronger and they're bigger and you're trusting them to sort of use their weight on you in a good way.
Yeah.
And when they do something that kind of is taking advantage of you a little bit, then there's got to be a frustration there. I mean, Kairi Sane did put a tweet out kind of basically saying, you know, "You will not hurt me no matter how much you try," which I know part of that's obviously storyline, but yeah, I mean, if I was Kairi, I'd probably be pissed.
Yeah, I mean, it was a feral cut on the nearer hairline, and she just threw her into the steps with undue force. I mean, it was reckless. I'm not saying she deliberately tried to hurt her, but she was deliberately throw her head first into the ring steps. There's no doubt in my mind about that. You know, given the size difference between the two, you know, Jax should have been more careful. I mean, she should never have done a spot like this, especially after the spot in the previous match where she was hurled into the bottom turnbuckle, and that looked really nasty, and you could tell that the referee was concerned. He was straight in there. I mean, this should have been laid out in a way. The match should have been laid out in a way that there was basically no or a very reduced possibility that Sane would be hurt again. And I just feel like, why was this spot included when the, you know, in best case scenario, Sane was going to smack those steps head first, which, you know, in these days when, you know, head trauma is such a big thing, why are spots like this being booked in WWE matches, Kenny? You know, I despair, really.
Yeah, I don't get it. And I don't, and I just, yeah. How many times can you give excuses for what feel like the same situation? Just, you know, but slight variations, but the same situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to see these two wrestle again. I mean, hopefully they won't.
The other big angle, obviously, on Raw was the continuation of the Lashley McIntyre feud. We saw, and I actually thought Lana this week was pretty good. I know. It's baffling. Because we had a segment with her and MVP where MVP's talking about, she was talking about how, you know, he's got a hold over her husband, and he said that he's got actual work to do and doesn't want to have anything to do with her drama. She's calling him a leech. And MVP's trying to revive his washed up career. That's what she's. And then MVP basically said that. She slaps him at the end, sorry.
As well. He said, well, you're washed up also. And then that was like, wham.
And then later on, Lana's getting interviewed about it, and Charlie Caruso's shown her the clip of what happened earlier. And
Lana was very proud of her work, wasn't she?
She was. It was a good slap. I'll give her that. She did well. And she ended up saying, you know, because, you know, she's not allowed to be out there at Lashley's matches anymore. And Charlie's asking her, you know, do you think that was Bobby or MVP's idea? And she said she's not sure, but, you know, the main event was Drew McIntyre versus MVP. But Lana said, well, you know, Bobby's asked me not to be ringside for any of his matches, but he didn't say anything about me being ringside for MVP's matches. And she laughs and walks off. So she kind of played MVP here. So she was actually clever.
She was actually clever, yes. So,
I love that me saying that is such a shock to you that I'm complimenting her, that you need a second to process it.
Yeah, I thought Lana did well on this program as well, and she took her time. I thought the timing of the slap on MVP was really well done. She was just like, you know, if this was Natalia, the timing would have been a disaster. It wouldn't have been anywhere near as good, but she timing was great. I thought she was really good when she was interviewed later about her conduct in the segment with MVP. And then she's like found this way of going to ringside without, violating the rules that Lashley's laid out. And she walked to ringside during the match. And she sort of almost in the end had the last laugh, didn't she? Because Drew scored a fairly easy victory over MVP. And it was like she was back in the frame again because she was calling the shots and she was making the rules and she wasn't being told what to do anymore. And I thought Lashley was pretty good when Lana came out. And Lashley's like, well, why is she out here? And then he's kind of thinking, oh, well, I didn't say that she couldn't come out during MVP's matches. MVP only took over on McIntyre after distraction from Lashley. And Drew did this pretty graceful, pretty amazing somersault flip dive to the floor on MVP and Lashley. I mean, that was something else, that wasn't it, Kenny?
Yeah, it was great. And like you say, he disposed of MVP pretty quickly. And the whole angle was really good. The only thing I just don't really understand is right after Drew gets the win, Lashley comes in and puts the full Nelson on Drew, and we just kind of go off the air with him still in the hold. And I think they were maybe going for like a bit of drama, but it kind of felt odd.
Yeah, maybe they were running late.
Maybe.
I think they overran because it was like Lashley. It was as if they said, Lashley, get in the ring, get the full Nelson on. We've got 6 seconds before we go off the air. So, I mean, at least he got in there and got the full Nelson on. And they were talking about how devastating the hold was. And then the show went off the air. So that'll be picked up next week. But, you know, I have no... I mean, to me, at least it was a different ending.
Is the feud working for you?
I think it is, yeah. I think it is. It's hard for me to believe that Lashley's going to defeat McIntyre. But I think they can have a hell of a match. I think Lashley is somebody who will benefit from this more than McIntyre will. Because Lashley really hasn't had a serious feud since... when do you think? Braun Strowman may, well, he obviously had the Roman Reigns feud.
I'd say the Roman Reigns feud is probably his last real proper serious feud.
Yeah, so I think he hasn't shown, a lot of people aren't aware of what Lashley can do, or at least what I think Lashley can do. So, and I think against McIntyre, that's a good arrangement of chess pieces, and I think these two can really put something together. So, to answer your question, Kenny, it is working for me. How about you? Is it working for you?
Yeah, no, I think it is working. And I think that the Lana thing, as long as she's just kind of like a background player in it and you're focusing on getting a more important Lashley, I think that's the key thing. And MVP's done really well. You know, I think that his MVP VIP lounges didn't really work that well for me. But now that he's actually in a story with someone and there's something there, there's him trying to get this big cage fighter and get him back to the sort of prominence that he should have. There's a good story in that. Yeah, Raw was a fun show as well. So,
Can I just mention a couple of other things about Raw, Kenny?
Sure.
I feel like the Viking Raiders and Street Profits may have jumped the shark. The bowling didn't really do it for me this week.
Wasn't the best one. If that had been the first one, that'd have been better. Like, because the other ones have been pretty good.
Yeah. Billy Kay versus Nikki Cross. My God, that match was terrible. Did you see the elbow drop that Billy did during that match?
I think to call that an elbow drop would be a real discredit to anybody who's ever done an elbow drop before. But Billy Kay would really be a great manager. It's just, in the ring, it's just not there.
I mean, when Cross made a big comeback, it was as if Billy wasn't cooperating. It was as if she was like sandbagging her and making Cross look bad on purpose. I don't think she was doing it on purpose, but it was just dreadful. Like, you never see work this bad on main roster WWE. You know, you just don't anymore. So, I mean, this was, what a contrast between this and everything else on this program. And then caping Cross, and it was just simply not believable, that pinfall. My God, I mean, yeah, Billy Kay is a good character. She's like the antithesis of Austin Theory and Murphy, isn't she? You know, she's got the character all worked out, but the in-ring's a disaster. And, I don't use that word lightly. You know, this match, Billy Kay was just dire in this match. One of the worst things I've seen in WWE this year.
Yeah, I can't argue. I really like the Iconics act, but the in-ring is just so poor.
Yeah.
They make the Bellas look like Luthez. Anyway.
Wow, Luthez reference.
Why not?
June 2020.
keep it alive. Listen, that's all we've got time for here in the main podcast. We're actually, the overrun this week on Patreon that we're doing, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, should be pretty interesting. We're going to be reviewing issue 134 of Power Slam, and there's tons to talk about from that 2005 issue with the Shawn Michaels heel turn and the Muhammad Hassan thing that they had to drop, and Brett going back and Punk signed, and lots to discuss. So it's well worth checking that out over there. Finn, do you have any plugs for us?
I'd just like to say that was a blockbuster issue. Blockbuster.
Very rarely do we dedicate an entire overrun just to the issue of the magazine. But with that issue, there's no point in trying to cram anything else in.
No, absolutely not. No plugs, Kenny. How about yourself?
Well, really, just the Patreon, as I said, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. Finn will be doing a new article for us, hopefully soon. We've got the overrun. We've got loads of content over there. So please do sign up and support us if you can. And then, obviously, youtube.com/InsideTheRopes. Subscribe today. Interviews going up all the time. New chats. I did one with Lance Archer right before Double or Nothing. There was conference calls, media calls with Drew McIntyre, the WWE Champion, Cody, Jon Moxley, Tony Khan, and a new exclusive interview with Tommaso Ciampa that just went up last night ahead of his big match with Karrion Kross at TakeOver in Your House on Sunday. So plenty of stuff over there as well. Finn, I hope you enjoy yourself and stay socially distant as required.
I will. I will be following the rules as always, Kenny. And I'm sure you will as well.
I mostly will. Thanks for listening, everybody. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.